The U.S. Customs and Border Protection has been implementing Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act since June. What does it mean that the U.S. is carrying out the act to prevent Uyghur forced labor? Would it work if other large economies such as the EU and Japan not having similar regulations? We know that the goods seized by U.S. Customs and Border Protection would be released to its exporter after a month. Would it happen that companies might ship those goods to other countries that don't have such regulations afterwards? How could this be avoided?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Enforcement of a law like this is always challenging. And undoubtedly, some companies are going to try to do just what you suggested. They're going to go and produce things and send them to a third country with the thought that they're going to eventually find their way into the United States. I think what's interesting to me is that there's also a debate now going on within the EU about following the U.S. lead. When the U.S. leads on something like this and does it so clearly and without much political debate. I mean, 406 members of the U.S. Congress voted for the Forced Labor Prevention Act, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. 406 members of the House of Representatives rarely vote for anything. And so there's a sense this is bipartisan. It's something that is very strongly held by the United States as a priority. And I think that will mean that other countries, the EU countries, perhaps Japan, Australia, are going to now look to say, should we be doing the same thing? Until they do, as you say, there are going to be other avenues for companies to export the materials from Xinjiang. And so we just have to take it one step at a time.
There might be some loopholes of the act that companies might be complicit of, directly or indirectly? Or is it so broad that many U.S. companies would have to change their suppliers to a large extent?
One of the things that's interesting about the law, and it's quite strict in saying that there's a presumption that goods coming from either manufactured in Xinjiang or using raw materials, cotton or polysilicon from Xinjiang, there's a presumption of forced labor. So the burden is on the company importing things into the United States to overcome that presumption, which I think is very difficult, if not impossible, to do, because there's really no independent monitoring of labor conditions in Xinjiang. The government has prohibited independent groups like Verite or others to come into that region. And so I think a company is going to have a very hard time saying we do monitoring and we're sure there's no forced labor to overcome that presumption. I think the biggest challenges are going to be for companies that are using cotton in clothing production or textiles, and companies using silicon or polysilicon in solar panels. And so I think the real discussion is going to be going forward, how are those companies operating? And to my mind, they're going to have to change the way in which they do business to comply with the law.
Some analysts think there might be difficulties for companies to prove that there are no forced labor in their supply chain, and therefore the best way for them is to avoid cotton and tomato products from Xinjiang completely. But it may worsen the turmoil of the supply chain, which is not in a good shape right now, and it is a factor to cause inflation in the U.S. Do you think that there is a way to address the manufacturers' concerns?
I don't think it's possible think about production, manufacturing of garments in China without addressing the question of where's the cotton coming from. Now, as you say, there's a balance. It means that there are certain economic consequences. If you can't produce in China, you have to go somewhere else to produce. You have to figure out Chinese cotton, Xinjiang cotton is also being exported to Vietnam, to Cambodia. to other places in Asia. So this is not an easy question for companies. I'm not for a minute thinking, oh, this is easy just to flip a switch and you can all of a sudden be in compliance. The other issue, which also is very much on the table with the solar panels, there is a environmental need to reduce carbon emissions. Solar panels are an alternative source of energy. Overwhelmingly, 90-some percent of the solar panels manufactured coming into the United States are coming from China, and there's an essential element in Xinjiang province. And so, you know, there's a you have to balance the interests. But I would say that Congress has spoken, the president has signed a law, and what needs to happen now is for the U.S. government and companies to begin thinking very creatively and ambitiously about finding alternatives.
Are you concerned about the possible disruption to green energy if there is supply shortage from Xinjiang?
From my mind, it's important to both be concerned about the, you know, our environmental footprint, reducing carbon emissions, and at the same time be concerned about the 1 million Uyghurs that I mentioned that are being detained in some form in Xinjiang province, the hundreds of thousands of people that are subject to forced labor. So we have to be mindful of both. You can't just say, okay, we're going to forget about human rights because we need to find alternative energy sources. You can't just say we're only going to focus on human rights without thinking about alternative ways to get solar panels or lithium or whatever into the supply chain. These are hard questions. I think both for companies and for government, these are questions that are going to require smart people to try to figure out how do you do both? How do you respect human rights, abide by the law, and at the same time find better ways, alternative ways to get solar panels and other alternative energy sources. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think importantly, we're now on a path where the human rights issues can no longer be ignored.
How do you see Uyghurs' situation in Xinjiang currently, seeing the mass surveillance, detention camps, labor camps, and genocide happening? Is the U.S. government taking urgent actions fast enough and effective enough? What else could be done to help Uyghur?
Well, I think on one level, certainly the rhetoric, the kind of public diplomacy has been very strong, both under the previous administration and under the current Biden administration. U.S. officials at the most senior level, including the president, have spoken out about the forced labor and all of the violations you describe. There's a lot of attention in the public domain, in the press. Congress is paying attention. So I think on one level, the issue has raised the issue is now at a much higher level in terms of public attention and profile. The question of what else can be done, I think, is to me the place we now need to focus. And I would say three things. One, as you suggested before, the United States acting alone is not enough. And so there needs to be, I think, greater attention to how do you bring the Japanese government, the Australian government, the EU, and other governments along to follow the U.S. lead and also have similar kinds of restrictions on imports coming from Xinjiang. If other big commercial countries with big economies follow suit, I think that puts greater and greater pressure on the Chinese government. Second thing I would say is we need to use, I think all of us collectively need to use the international organizations like the United Nations, the International Labor Organization. Chinese government is very active now in the international stage with organizations like the UN. And I think there's really a value in those organizations also speaking out. I think the Chinese government would pay attention to that. And then the third piece is the private sector. And again, our experience over the last several years is that the Chinese government will attack or criticize one company, try to put pressure on them. Other companies are terrified. We don't want to be next. And so they keep their head down. I think this is a moment where companies, let's say in the apparel industry or in the solar panel industry, need to come together with a common message and say to the Chinese government, we're now under pressure based on this new law to do something different. We need you to help us be able to continue manufacturing and producing products in China. So a combination of greater international attention among governments, the UN, and the private sector. All of those things, I think, need to be increased.
Xi Jinping has been in power for 10 years. Have you noticed any major changes in his policy toward Uyghur people recently with quite significant international pressure?
Well, I think we've all been, or people that I work with have been really frustrated, disappointed, especially I would say since maybe 2017. There's been a dramatic deterioration of rights. All of the things we're discussing, the detentions, the surveillance, the forced labor, all of that has accelerated tremendously in the last 5 years. And Xi Jinping seems determined to kind of take a hard line, a tough line. He's running for another five-year term, as you say, and there'll be a party Congress, I guess, in the fall. But I'm not optimistic based on what we've seen in his first 10 years in power. He is not, I've been going to China since the early 90s, and I was in the U.S. government 10 years ago. There were moments where we were thinking, okay, we're starting to see some greater engagement and discussion about some of these issues. The door has been slammed shut. There's much less willingness to engage about things that I think are both in China's interest and the interest of the world. We do not have a healthy, open dialogue about human rights issues now under Xi Jinping's leadership, which is unfortunate. I think it's bad for China, it's bad for the world, and it's certainly bad for minority populations like the Uyghurs. Today, China's advanced unbelievably economically. The private sector has flourished over the last 30 or 40 years. The country is a very different place. But the government can't keep saying, we'll put off human rights and the protection of individual rights forever. Poverty has been greatly alleviated. And the theory was always, when we get to a place that we have greater economic resources, then we'll allow people to have free speech and free press, and will open up the political process. If anything, as I say, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, Xi Jinping has turned the clock backwards and has gone back to an earlier era where Chinese government was dug in and basically said, we're doing it our way. International human rights norms don't apply. And I think that's bad for China. It's bad for the Chinese people. And it's certainly bad for human rights.